Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens, and tonight the discussion is going to be The Honeymooners. Joining me for the discussion of this landmark comedy series are Aaron White. Say hello.
Hello.
Carl Kafer, say hello.
Greetings and salutations.
And after a two-year absence, Sammy Giuliano, say hello. And Sammy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hi all. Yes, my name is Sam Giuliano. I live in Fairview, New Jersey, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump across the Hudson River from Manhattan. I could see the New York skyline, in fact, where I am right now. I'm up in the school where I teach during the week, and I came back up here now to use the facilities, and there wouldn't be any noise. And I'm a veteran teacher, 37 years in the town that I live in the same school where my wife is principal. And I'm presently teaching a summer program. I'm also the proctor of film, opera, music, literature blog site, which has been in existence since 2007, called Wonders in the Dark, which can be accessed at wondersinthedark.com. And recently I got into writing, and I wrote a novel about my hometown, a coming-of-age story called Paradise Atop the Hudson, and I'm working on the sequel, which is almost done. All right, that's pretty much.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the book. It's Paradise was a very nice little book.
Well, thank you.
Actually, not that big. It's like, what, 500 pages?
Well, it wasn't that long, but it was longer than most young adult novels. Yes.
Yep.
Longer
than
most.
But it was very well done. I can definitely recommend it. So, you know, the one question I want to ask everyone tonight on this episode is this, and that is, how did we first come to this show? And I'll start with you, Aaron. How did we first come to this show?
The Flintstones. I actually have no idea. I recently just watched the whole thing for the first time. I've seen it before. I've seen the sketches from the Jackie Gleason show. I've seen old episodes. I don't know when I first saw it. This is, I think, the first time you've asked that question that I haven't had a sufficient answer. It's one of those shows that I don't remember not knowing, even though I, again, just saw all of it for the first time recently.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Sammy? How did you first come to this show?
This show is more than a show. It's an institution. I started watching it maybe at 10 years old. I've watched each of the 39 episodes no less than 200 times in my lifetime. It was shown on WPIX. People that I grew up with every day, we share dialogue and we talk on the phone. We yell a comment. It's part of our life. It's not just the greatest sitcom of all time, in my opinion. It eclipses I Love Lucy and your show of shows in the earlier days, and even in the later sitcoms like MASH and They're All in the Family and Mary Tyler Moore, Dick Van Dyke. I have it at the number one spot. I think it's the greatest comedy sitcom of all time, and I'm here to defend that position. So I've been watching it over and over and over and over and over over decades, and I'm 67 years old now. So it's over 50 years that I've been honeymooner smitten.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I'm going to say that I don't know when I first came to it. It seems like with me, it's kind of like with you. There never was a time where this show wasn't there. because it was always on. It was always on somewhere, and you knew who these characters were. I'm pretty sure I must have seen it before I saw the Flintstones, because I remember watching the Flintstones and thinking, oh yeah, that's that black and white show. You know, I'm thinking that this, I must have been having those thoughts when I was like 2 or 3. Because, you know, obviously, you know, like I mentioned to people, I have a weird old memory. My memory stretches way back to when I was a kid. And it's just, I cannot remember a time when this show was not there. And, you know, I'm sure that I'm not the only person that has that sense that it's just a foundational piece of pop culture. So what about you, Carl?
I was thinking about that. I would guess it'd be 1964. I'm a little younger than Sammy, but not too younger. And I must have been about
54. I was born in 54. You said you were born in 54?
58, actually.
What about? Oh, no, then you were younger. I'm 54. Right. Okay. 4 years.
Okay. But what I remember was we lived in Beaver Falls, which is outside of Pittsburgh in Beaver County. And that was the first place that I remember we had a UHF station. And that was out of Pittsburgh, I think. I know it was Channel 53. I forget what the call letters were. But I know that they ran the Honeymooners. And I know I watched the Honeymooners before I watched the Flintstones, because I could tell right away that was taken from the Honeymooners, that I'd seen it. So I would guess around 64 when I was about 6 years old.
So, you know, now I'm going to ask the question that I always seem to ask here, and that is, you know, are there really any themes that run through this series? And I'll turn that to you, Sammy. You know, does this show really have any themes to it?
Well, I mean, it centers around the two characters, and then the wives are also important, especially Audrey Meadows as Ralph's wife, Alice. But the themes have to do with Ralph's personality, you know, that he's always making bad decisions, and he's always living to regret them. You know, he's a big, loud mouth, a braggadocio. You know, he just jumps on the opportunity to put himself always at center stage. And throughout the series, he always falls on his face, because every decision blows up in his face, whether it's a get-rich-quick scheme, or, you know, just becoming famous, or, going, I remember in the one episode where he goes on a television show, the $99,000 answer, and he's, you know, he thinks that he's going to go all the way to the top, and lo and behold, he misses on the very, very first question, which was, the one little piece of music that Norton kept playing on the piano that was annoying Ralph, and saying, please stop doing that. And then he was asked to identify that very piece of music. But, you know, he's a loudmouth. You know, he's a narcissist in some ways, but then the show does report on him as being a loving person as well. You know, he says to Norton, I don't care. What I say about him is one thing. What I think about him is another. When he yelled at somebody for him reacting when he heard Norton was rushed to the hospital. But, you know, he is your typical, you know, your narcissist, it's always about him. But he's got some redeeming qualities with his relationship with his wife. And the show always ends with a lot of them end with them kissing and, you know, baby, you're the greatest. So it does end on, you know, a more humane note. But, of course, the themes you ask about are running through it. They're themes of his personality, of his excesses, Those are the themes that run through it.
So what about you, Carl?
I think the one thing, I don't think there's so many, like, themes, but the one thing I would say is that it's the first show that really showed working class people. I think that's one of the things, and this was not your father knows best. This was not,
no.
You know, I married Joan. This was, you know, real work. You know, he worked for the bus company. Norton's a sewer worker. It's a two-room apartment, very sparse. You know, they're trying to make it. He's trying to be, you know, get rich quick. But the one thing, if there's any theme about it, it's about Alice. Because Alice is not intimidated by him at all. I think it's one of the best portrayals of women, particularly in 50s and 60s. Because she is very commonsensical. She knows it's a bunch of bullshit, and she doesn't, you know, and she goes right after him. So yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you know, this all goes into what I was going to say here, and that is, you know, for me, there's a lot of what both of you have said, but you know, for me, the theme has always been really about kind of twofold, dreaming of a better life and surviving in the reality you have. You know, it is both in some sense a coldly cruel show, but also one of the warmest shows ever. And I think the warmth overtakes it, and that's a good thing. You know, people, you hear a lot of people now criticize the show, and they've always criticized the show about this, saying, oh, well, you know, Ralph was a jerk. He was so violent. He was knocking Alice around. He was threatening her. He never laid a hand on her, and when he would threaten her, that was not a threat, folks. It was like, you know, I mean, it's not even Bugs Bunny saying why I oughta, because Bugs Bunny actually was going to fuck you up. He loved Alice too much. He knew he had a good thing. He lived in fear that this mighty and fine and amazing woman he lucked into having in his life was going to leave him. He knew better. That's why he always kept shit from her. That's why he and Norton went off and had half the shenanigans they did, because they were little boys and she was the wise mother and type figure that, but you know, that's another thing. This is a sitcom in the 50s with two couples that don't have kids.
Oh, good pull on that.
Sure.
Good pull.
And I just always thought that was part of it. That there's a sadness and a loneliness to it, but there's also a warmth, and I've always fucking loved that about this show. But yeah, sorry about that. Sorry if I took one of your points, Aaron. But yeah, what about you? What do you think the themes of the show are?
Well, I just wanted to touch on that point real quick, because now there's really no point of dropping the bomb. They don't have kids, and they never want it. Like, it's very modern in that way. Like, they don't have to justify why they don't have children. It's also a sneaky feminist show, though not maybe by today's standards, certainly by the 50s standards.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't need, I don't think, to say any more about Alice right now, because I think you guys all nailed it. So what I'm going to say is that I think that this is a truly pure sitcom, in that the themes are the characters, as Sammy said, and that you are literally putting them in different stupid situations
to find out how that specific character is going to react each time. And the themes kind of sort themselves out from there, whether it be their lives or their livelihoods. That's just part of who they are. It's not a theme of the show. It's what makes them them, and the show is about them and the situations in which they get themselves.
So, Carl, I will let you answer the be the first one to answer this next question, and that is this one of the rare shows where all four members of the principal cast are just about equally great, or is it really, as some have said, the Gleason-Carney hour?
Okay, I'm not going to discount the women, and particularly Jane Meadows, and I am talking about the 39. Episodes, not so much the skits that came beforehand. But I'm not going to, and actually Trixie is not nearly as developed as Alice. You don't see her as much and so on and so forth.
No. There's times where she's just a voice calling down the steps. You hear her voice like in one scene and that's it.
Right, exactly. But for me, you say it's the Gleason-Carney show. I say it's the Carney show. And I think the reason for that, for me, is that I do not like Gleason's character. Too much of a blowhard. I would never have anything to do with that man. However, Carney is just, well, okay, we mentioned Bugs Bunny. I've never been a Bugs Bunny fan. I'm a Daffy Duck fan. Okay, and to me, Ed Norton is Daffy Duck in this case. And just a wonderful, wonderful comic presence. And I truly think it's his show. I do not think it's Gleason's show. But
I almost think he's more like Porky Pig. He's the guy that means well and isn't going to fuck you up except by his own silliness.
Actually, that's not bad. That's not bad. That's pretty good. I can see that.
But yeah, no. Yeah, this reminds me. Aaron and I were having a discussion the other day, and he said, where were they going to take this this show? And I'm going to save that comment for the next question. So Aaron, what about you?
I actually think it's the Gleason Meadows show. Art Carney was wonderful, gave a wonderful performance, but Ed Norton was too stupid to live. And frankly, I'm over these characters. I think that it adds something wretched to the culture. And maybe that's just the snotty intellectual that I am, just being over the anti-intellectual movement of today, but that's where I'm at. Gleason absolutely is a blowhard, but he's a blowhard because he's a big guy and he had to be to survive. It's the Alice show. I think my dad said this was from the era where men were the head of the household, but the women were the neck on which it turns. I think that's just dead accurate. The show is about Ralph, but it's not at the same time. I would call it the Ralph and Alice.
And what about you, Sammy?
Well, it looks like I have to break the tie. I'm definitely with Aaron on this. It's Gleason's show. He's the genius behind it. I love Carney, and without Carney, it would be so much diminished. But there's no question that it's Gleason and his relationship with Alice, Audrey Meadows. I agree with all of you when you said that Trixie was just marginally involved in it. Some episodes you never saw her and heard about her, although when she did contribute, it was certainly spot on. But it was really the relationship between Ralph and his wife. And then Norton is like, I guess the comparison would be with, what's the Mayberry show? Andy Griffith.
Maybe RFD.
Where would that be without Don Knotts is the point. But that doesn't mean that Don Knotts uproots Andy Griffin and Ronnie Howard and all of them. I could compare it in that regard. And when you mentioned kids, I just wanted to put on when the Flintstones, you know, the honeymoon is animated doppelganger came on, they did have kids. So they didn't, they kind of altered the chemistry a little from the honeymoon show. But I thought that was an excellent point you made about kids. But I answered your question, and I don't want to belabor it. I think they're all important. But Gleason, by the way, Gleason was not fat. The fat jokes were, they were being thrown at him constantly all through the series. The truth of the matter is he really wasn't that heavy. They had to put pillows into in him and stuff to make him appear. You know, but he was actually really not that heavy and not that rotund of a guy, which is
it was powerfully built, but he wasn't what I call overweight.
Right, right. No,
and people forget how people forget how despite the size that he did have, he could the man was very light on, and I mean this, you know, he could dance. He was very nimble.
Well, you know what? He the jokes were, you know, eat more peanuts like every other elephant. Like, he wasn't an elephant. I mean, the exaggeration, but that's what made the lines funny, though. They still worked. But you have to look back at the show and wonder how they pulled it off because, you know, if physically he was, you know, he's a little heavier than an average to warrant the kind of attacks that were being put against him every episode.
Yeah,
funny that way. Maybe that adds to the humor, the exaggeration. I don't know. It works, no matter how you look at it.
So, Aaron, this next question is for you. This is a very formulaic series, yet it's also one of the best examples of such a series. I think they probably took it as far as they could in those 39 episodes. Do you agree or disagree?
More or less. I really can't see this going more than like 50 episodes, maybe two seasons, though the first season was 39 episodes, so we're talking about a different era of television. But no,
Yeah, I think we might have lost him.
Nope. Aaron, you still there?
Oh, okay.
I'm still here.
You cut out for a second. We missed that last about 10 seconds of what you said. You know what? Aaron, I'm gonna have you how about this? Call right back into the show. I think that you're having issues with the phone. So call right back, and I'll move to Sammy, and then you can answer the question next. Okay, so Sammy, what do you think? Do you think that the show could have gone on or no?
Because there were only 39 episodes, they were all pure gold. Naturally, I would have loved to see them go further than 39, but Gleason is the one who pulled the plug on it. He said, no more, that's it. He surprised CBS and the sponsors by calling an end to the show because he thought it was perfect. The writing was dead on, the acting, everything worked perfectly. He didn't think that a second season, it would be risking it. He thought that he didn't want to take that risk. He thought he accomplished comedic perfection, and he wanted to stop it at the 39 episodes. who's to argue when you look at the results? He's probably right, because maybe they would have used a lot of the same ideas again in a second season. Maybe it would not have been as effective, because every episode in its own way, and I know you're going to go to the questions of the favorite episodes, but the truth of the matter is I'm not going to jump the gun, except I'll say only one thing, that all 39 episodes, they're roughly equal. There's very few television shows where you can say that every single episode is about equal in merit, meaning in this case, all of them are fantastic, every single one. There's not a weak episode in the 39. So maybe Gleason's decision was the right decision. Television critics believe that it was, and I have to agree with them.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that Aaron and I were discussing before the show, and that's what I was alluding to before I decided to push it to this one, and that's, you know, where could you really have gone with it, with this concept? I mean, maybe you could get two or three episodes of humor out of, say, there being a bus strike and Ralph has to become a driver for, you know, the garbage, you know, for city waste management, and then maybe you get some jokes and some sort of like rivalry between Norton and Ralph, with Norton saying, "Well, I'm down here in the tunnels," and Ralph saying, "Yeah, well, I'm up here driving the streets," you know, stuff like that. But how much humor can you really get out of that? Maybe three episodes where it could really be good. Is that enough to sustain another season? No. But Aaron, you're back. So let's see. What was that point you were making when your phone decided to poop out?
Well, I was just saying basically what you just said, that that there was something with the bus driving that wasn't working out, and that he had to find a new job. And, I mean, frankly, they already did that episode.
Yeah.
So, perfect.
So what about you, Carl?
Well, could they have done more episodes? Absolutely. Should they have? Probably not. To be honest, I think. Okay, you said it was Gleason that made that decision, which makes sense. Whoever made that decision, I think, made the right decision. Because you have one perfect season. And it is, you know, as much as I may dislike the character of Ralph, I think that the writing, I think that everything worked really well, and it's like a painting, okay? That's a mural on the side of a building or something like that. You know, you don't want to cover the whole building with it. You have one side that's absolutely perfect. And that's what they got.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sammy, I'm going to ask you this question. When considering this show, you know, when you think of the Honeymooners, do you also consider the sketches, or do you tend to just consider the Classic 39, and why?
There was a time when I considered the sketches, and I acquired them on DVD in the early stages of the format, the lost episodes, they were called. And, you know, they set up the mise en scene for the regular Classic 39, which is what they're called, the Classic 39. And the truth of the matter is that those sketches, they were interesting, but they did not, you know, match up to what happened. Everything came together with the Classic 39. You know, it was a maturation. And just what we saw with the sketches was just a little touch, a little hint, a little clue of what we were going to get with the Classic 39. I've come to the position that I don't think I'll ever watch the sketches ever again. And I got them somewhere in the house on old DVDs, but they didn't work for me in the way that The Honeymoon is the classic 39 didn't work. It was a 1 year effort there that, you know, they hit a grand slam there. The sketches were nice for historical reasons, but for entertainment and matching up to the 39, no, they didn't do it. Not even close.
What about you, Carl?
To be honest, I don't remember seeing the sketches.
I know the 39 episodes. That's what I know. That's what I consider the Honeymooners. So I have to go with that way.
Yep. And Aaron?
He's right. He's right.
That's part of the Jackie Gleason show. I don't think that's really canon to The Honeymooners. I don't think you need it. I don't think that it adds anything. I think it helps you understand Jackie Gleason's career. But there's a reason it was part of the Jackie Gleason show and not its own thing on its own. And that's because of what Sammy said. Like, it got a lot better when they really arranged it for itself to be the showcase, not the sketch, as part of the variety show.
Yeah. Yeah. So now I'm going to go to you, Carl, for this question. Do you have a few, a couple favorite episodes?
Okay. I told you at the beginning, you know, while we were talking beforehand, I have two words for you. Hello, Paul.
Yep. That's a great one.
Okay, seriously, I saw that, and I fell in love with Art Carty. Now, you know, I've already said that my love of this show is because of Carney, and there's no question. But the comic sense, and let's, you know, when we had the question of, whose show it was, and I said it was Carney show, let's not forget that out of everyone there, Jane Meadows won an award once. I think she won an Emmy once. He won it 4 times for this role over the years. The man, just the sense of timing, everything. And then you see him later in something like Harry and Tonto, and it's completely different. The man was a great, great actor. He was a great comedic actor. And those two words made me a fan for life, seriously. So that's my favorite episode.
But, you know, for me, it's not just the way that he said it. It's the combined image of Gleason trying to putt, and then Carney. It's just, my God, for me, it's so hard to separate the two. And that doesn't even mean that I'm one of the ones that would think of it as the Gleason-Carney hour or the Gleason-Carney show, because it really isn't. But, you know, it's just one of the great pairings, and so many of the great moments are there now. Now, for me, I have a few favorite episodes. I have a bunch of favorite episodes, but you know, one of the ones that I like is where they go to shoot pool, and you see these two guys leave the pool table, and so, you know, Ralph and Norton come in, and then the other guys come in, and or the one guy comes in and says, but this is our table. Me and my friend Harvey had this table, and Norton gets Ralph into trouble with Harvey. Now, Harvey is like 7 feet tall, 400 pounds of muscle, looks like he's dipped in brine, chiseled from cement, and has eagle's nests for eyebrows. He's just a mean, big, vicious-looking son of a bitch. And, of course, Ralph says, oh, Harvey. So you're going, Harvey, yes, I'm going to tell Harvey, and then, you know, well, he's going to turn your friend into bookends. And, well, we all know what happens, but it's just, it's great. But I also love the Christmas episode. I know it's just, you know, the gift of the Magi, but the way it's played is just so wonderful. You know, there's the golfing episode, there's the episode with the musical instruments, you know, there's just so many.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. That's a good one, too. The cornet, yeah.
The Christmas episode is the only episode where they go out of, they go out, they leave the, you know, the set, and they go out. They open the curtain and they go before the audience. That's the only time that they, you know, become their real selves. That was the only time they did that.
Yep. Well, you know, that episode, a couple years ago, I showed my girlfriend that episode. No, she'd never seen The Honeymooners. Somehow she'd gone over well over 40 years without ever seeing a full episode that she could remember. And she watched it and she loved it. And she said to me, she said, that show is so different from what I was expecting. Mm. And then she and I sat and we watched over the next couple of weeks, we watched maybe another six or seven episodes. But something that she mentioned, and I had to look up to make sure it was true. Louis C.K. had a show called Lucky Louie. And the set for Lucky Louie was based on the apartment for the Cramdons, and she noticed it, and she said, "Is that really looks like the set? Did they base that on this?" And I said, "Actually, yes." So, you know, we literally had this show getting copied by other people decades mm-hmm. later. So I think that shows, you know, the show's reach.
Yeah.
So, what about you, Sammy? What are some of your favorites?
Well, I just argued a little while ago that all 39 were equal, but that doesn't mean that I don't think that there's a couple of absolute standouts and personal favorites. And the one that I'm going to identify as my absolute favorite has become famous during the Trump administration, because it's used now in all these humorous skits online when Ralph comes and he wants to go to some mystery show and his mother-in-law spills the beans. And she says, it was the uncle that did it. And then he looks at it and he sticks his finger in her face and says, you are a blabbermouth, blabbermouth, out. And he throws her out of the apartment. And, of course, we've seen that done online with Trump. Where now they have, you know, they have Ralph Cramden telling Trump to get out of his apartment. They've been using that a lot. But even so, I you know, the whole idea of the record, making the record, and then Ralph losing his, you know, losing his shirt, and he's saying, you know, that you were never any good, you were always rotten, and then the wife moves out of the apartment, and then in the end, you know, he makes up, but it's just outrageous that he would throw his mother-in-law out by abusing her like that. It's just, it's beyond hysterical. Of course, I love the Better Play through TV when they have a television show where they're making a new gadget. And then the one I mentioned, the $99,000 answer. And then Norton's greatest episode for me was the one where he was, they disguised him as a doctor. Ralph thought that he was going to die in 6 months. And all the newspapers, magazines, they were running stories on him. And then they find out where Alice finds out that he was reading the doctor's reports for the dog, you know, tongue turning purple and, you know, losing your hair. It was the dog that he was mistaken for the doctor's report. So then he brings Norton to the guy who runs the newspaper, and he says to him, you know, he's dressed up. You can see it's like a sham, and he's funny. He's just like, now, where did you go to school? And he says, I went to 78 Oyster Bay, meaning Brooklyn. And he says, where did you practice? I don't practice. I know it. I didn't practice. Then he asked him about London. You know, you went to school in London. You don't know where it is. He says, hey, Jesus, it's so foggy over there. I don't know where I am. And that was a hysterical confrontation they had with him as a doctor. And I agree with, if not Aaron, the other fellow here who says that he's a beloved, you know, he's a beloved, beloved man. He is. And, you know, I'm not surprised he won the Emmys, just like I wasn't surprised that Don Knotts won the Emmys as the supposed second fiddle to Andy Griffith. Carney was beloved, and he was in shows, and the one I mentioned, but I don't want to hog all the episodes. I identified the three or four that I love the most. I'll let other people say what they want to say now.
So what about you, Aaron?
Well, I came in with three. They've all been mentioned. So the golfer, which Carl mentioned, and the $99,000 question. And then Better Living Through TV, which is probably my favorite show, my favorite episode, as Ralph gets himself into a situation that he believes is can't fail because he's so personable and so charismatic. And then as soon as he realizes that the cameras are going to be airing this to a million people, he just loses his nerve. Ed makes all of the other devices work better than they should, and he can't get it to do anything. He breaks it off on live TV.
So Sammy, is there a single moment in this show that defines the series for you?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, it's the kind of show where, you know, the writers, Walter Marks, and I forget the other writer's name, and I think you asked that or you alluded to it, that, it, you know, I know Cramden, Gleason changed some of the dialogue, added things, ad-libbed, but the writers were brilliant. The writers of the show were absolutely brilliant. They were Jewish-American writers. And, you know, it was set in Brooklyn, New York area. They had everything down pat. There's really not one moment. I mean, there's, you know, the one that Aaron just mentioned, you know, Better Luck Through TV, you know, the hummina, hummina, hummina. You know, maybe the hummina, hummina, hummina line, which he does that with Harvey in the one you mentioned in the pool hall, hummina, hummina, hummina. You know, whenever he says hummina, 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 you know, it's hysterical, and the laugh track goes berserk. You know, maybe that's, you know, maybe that's part of it. I know in Fortune, where they think they're going to inherit a fortune, and then they find out it's a bird that's named Fortune, and I know that Norton tries to imitate Ralph. It's hysterically hummina, 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 and then he falls down on the floor and faints. So it's these histrionics, these physical histrionics, you know, the voice changing and contorting that I think define the show at its most hysterical. That's the way I see it.
So, Aaron, what about you?
There's the moment in the final episode where Ralph and a former romantic rival are out to dinner with their wives. And they are there because Ralph didn't have the courage to admit that he didn't make a lot of money. And we find out that neither does the other guy, and that they're both there hoping that the other guy takes the check because neither of them can afford the restaurant they're at because they both had big mouths and couldn't get out of the situation. And to me, that whole build-up, and then the quiet leaving of the restaurant really defined that show for me.
Great choice.
What about you, Carl?
Three words. You're the greatest. I think the one thing that really, really is the point of that show, and I hate to admit it, but it's true, is that as much of a blowhard, as much of an asshole that Ralph Cramden can be, he loves his wife and always will.
Yes, he does.
You know, and again, I think part of it is also the sense that these are lower class people. And that's a great pull on the last episode because I'd forgotten about that. It's been years since I've seen the show. But that's the whole point, I think. I think the real thing about it is that it shows people in a less than perfect financial state, and they still survive, and they still pull together. And as much as there's issues in, you know, with them and family, however you want to put it, that there's still love. So you're the greatest. I think that's the defining moment of the show.
So now, for you, Aaron, what is the series' greatest strength and its greatest weakness?
Its greatest strength is that it knows what it's trying to do, and it never tries to do more than that. It knows that it has 3.5 very strong characters. It knows that there's got to be an A story with Ralph and Alice, and a B story with Ralph and Ed, and that the B story is going to get him in trouble in the A story, and that he's going to either end with saying, "Baby, you're the greatest," or "Me and my big mouth." And that it's okay that it doesn't have to do more than that, because while it does follow a very predictable format and formula, that it perfected that formula. Its greatest weakness, I don't know. At the time, I don't know if I could say there's any. It's aged very well, though it is very much of its time. And so that may hurt it ever so slightly, but not really, because I think that it was a prime example of the best of its era. And even though it was of its time, that doesn't mean that, like, it wasn't the Drek of its time. So that's only half of a weakness, but I guess that's what I've got.
So what about you, Carl?
Okay, I would agree with Aaron on his first point. I would use the word workmanlike, because it's sculpted in such a way that, you know, even with the repetitiveness of the plots and so on and so forth, it just is so clean. It's clean. It's like a clockwork that you know is going to happen. It happens every hour, but goddamn, you could just watch it because it's so fascinating. Right? And I think that's also its weakness. It would have been interesting, I think, that, you know, if one were to go on to a second season, to do something a little different with it and to stretch it somewhat. And to stretch the characters into, you know, more ups and downs and things like that that made sense realistically. So I do think the repetitive of it is probably something that holds it back for me. But yet, goddamn, that's great clockwork to look at. It really is. It is so well put together. So that's what
and,
I would
say. Yep. And Sammy?
Well, the strength of the show, centers around that brilliant writing and the three performance exclusive of Joyce Randolph, who was very good in what she did, but she wasn't there enough. The three dead-on performances, which are just, you know, three of the greatest performances in television history. And I don't feel there's any weaknesses at all, not even remotely a weakness, although I can say why some people in evaluating the show would point to the fact that there was, you know, there was that single set, you know, the Cramden kitchen, which you're seeing, you know, in front of you. You never get to see the bedroom. And sometimes it goes out, like it goes to the lodge, and when they go on another funny episode when they get tied together and, you know, with handcuffs, and he says, you mind if I smoke? He says, I don't care if you burn. They go on, you know, they go on a train trip. And then they go to a masquerade ball. Usually it's that one single set. And most of the times when you think about that, it shouldn't work for that reason alone. It should not work. It should not work. But the point is that it does work because you have, you know, you have these great performers and great writing, you know, collaborating. And, you know, he said he wanted to cut the, you know, the cord after the one season because everything was perfect. And I'm going to go, you know, I'm biased, obviously, having seen the episode so many times. I'm biased. You're not asking a fair opinion of me, but I'm going to give it to you anyway and say that I think it's perfection. It's perfection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Carl, here is this question, and that is this a triumph of writing, acting, directing, or production?
I think it's a triumph of acting and writing. Though I will say this, that the production of it, whoever developed that set, right, and understood that it was, you know, lower middle class and so on and so forth. You know, I mean, let's face it. You take a look at that. You mentioned that that Louis show was, you know, had the same design. Also, let's not forget that there are scenes from a particular episode. I think it's A Man from Space. It's actually in Back to the Future. and they have design there. Also, it to me, though, if you really have to say it's the acting, you know, and I cannot say enough about Art Carney, because when you talk about the greatest sidekicks ever, he's the one that set the fucking trope. Okay. And that's the writers too. Okay. And, you know, so I would say particularly, if I were to say acting, writing, and right behind the writing, the production design.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was.
Well, and what about you, Sammy?
That minimalist, you know, production design worked wonders. I mean, it was as minimalist as you could ever get. You know, you had a you know, all shoddy, impoverished inside with just a kitchen sink, a table, a chest of drawers, a refrigerator that had a little white pan that would collect water underneath it. And then, of course, the set design of the window where you would scream out, you know, either at Norton or the Chinese restaurant, you know, the alleyway. So there was hardly anything there. But as Aaron said, it was a brilliant production design because they made it so that it would yield to the performances and to the writers. The writers can't be praised enough because they gave the lines to the two of them. And Ralph, I mean, and Jackie Gleason himself, when he was alive, paid tribute to the writer. He thought that was brilliant. But there's no taking it. It's the way the lines are set. So Art Carney, brilliant, the greatest sidekick in television history. Jackie Gleason, the great one. And then, of course, Audrey Meadows was just wonderful as his wife. So those are the, you know, it's a collaboration of acting, writing, and production design, maybe lesser than those other two elements, but it was still important.
Mm-hmm. And finally to you, Aaron.
Well, it's acting. That's the long and the short of it. I mentioned something that no one else has mentioned, which is the direction. All 39 episodes were directed by the same person. And there were times that I seriously thought that the show had, despite the...
we lost him again.
He's still there. I can hear him.
Moves. It's just of this world that Ralph creates, because let's make really no qualms about this. Ralph is creating her sleepwalk. There's the stillness to it that kind of transcends the chaos. And I'm not going to say this is a triumph of directing. It's not, because it is a triumph of acting. And after that, it's a triumph of writing. And after that, it's a triumph of production. But I do think that the direction is worth noting, because I do think that it works much better than it should.
Oh, yeah. So now to you,
except
Sammy.
That the director took orders from Gleason Saperstein, right? Gleason was calling all the shots. But I mean, I don't take it away from Saperstein, but the real dictator on that show was Gleason himself.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. But now to you, Sammy, and. That is this. What do you see as the show's legacy and influence?
Well, you know, I know I jumped the gun when you sent that message, and I mentioned the Flintstones, you know, the influence it had on the Flintstones. But, I mean, it's a unique show, and it's of its era. I mean, you know, television changed over the decades since the Honeymooners were out there. But it's just its legacy is that it used the most simple situations and plots and went to somebody's, humanity and how these people got along, a wife and a husband and their friends upstairs. And it's sort of a microcosm of the relationship between people in a very small area living in this, you know, this apartment house and how they interact. And the relationship is as close as you can get. And everyone, whether it's adverse, whether it's celebratory, it shows you, you know, how, you know, people live and how they survive, you know, when they don't have much to live, they don't have money, they somehow survive. And it pokes fun at people's excesses, at their vanities, and then Ralph Cramden's vanity of Norton's is lovable, but his stupidity is constantly being questioned. You know, I mean, when Ralph says to him, "I'm going to make you own half of the enterprise. You're going to own half. I'm going to own half." You know, and he swindles him out of that, of his half of the, you know, the ownership. So you know, it's timeless. It's timeless.
Yep.
I think every comedian in years, decades later, has made mention of it and how it influenced the way they thought and the way they put comedy together. It's a timeless orchestration that, for its time in that era in the mid-50s, was tremendously successful. And its legacy is that when you have everything working full throttle, you can achieve perfection. That's what its legacy is.
Yeah. So, Aaron, what about you?
This is its legacy. We're talking about a show that's 67 years old and only had 39 episodes, and we're talking about it tonight. That's its legacy. Nothing else needs to be said. The fact that we are talking about a TV show that is more, it's almost as old as television as a mass medium. And it had it only had twice as many episodes as Freaks and Geeks. And here we are talking about it almost 70 years later.
Yep. Yep. You, Carl?
Well, you know, I mean, almost any sitcom that is set in a lower income, say, own family, The King of Queens, owes its existence to The Honeymooners. But just to give you an idea, let's not forget that even in the 50s, when it only aired for a year, Warner Brothers cartoons did whole things like as the Happy Mousers, the Honey Mousers, and Cheese It the Cat, and so on and so forth. You know, Stan Freberg did the Honey Earthers. And God knows, you know, Futurama, Moonlighting, all these. Let's not even forget in the 70s that there were even porn versions, okay, which is kind of frightening. The Simpsons, and let's face it, Ralph Crampton or Jackie Gleason has, at the Port Authority, has a life-size statue. And that's at the New York City Department of Waste. There's a life-size statue of Ed Norton, of Art Carney.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously. You know, so you talk about a show that ran for 1 year that has that type of influence on pop culture. Are you kidding me? Seriously.
Yeah.
One of the greatest, we talk about one season shows. That's the king of it because it had such a great influence. And, yeah, you can argue it wasn't one season because of the episodes on Cavalcade of Stars and so on and so forth. But nonetheless, I'm going to call it a one season.
So now we come to the final question of the evening. And that is, excuse me, and that is for you, Aaron. Where do we rank this all time?
36.
36, you said?
36.
And for you, that's out of, is it still 60?
That's out of almost 100.
Oh, wow. Yes, yes. So what about you, Sammy? Where do you rank it?
I rank it number 2. It's the second greatest television show of all time, only behind, narrowly behind The Twilight Zone, which is number 1. For me, it's the two CBS shows hold down the two top positions of all time. Twilight Zone, number 1, then The Honeymoon is number 2. And I can't be talked out of that position.
There you go.
And what about you, Carl?
It's funny. For me, I have said, you know, that I have issues with Jackie Gleason's character, Ralph Crampton. So for me, it's not really ranked. However, if I take a look at influence, like we were just talking, and we look at, it's got to be top 10. You know, if I'm not thinking of something personally that I like, right, then easily top 10. Easily. Because of the influence. No question.
Well, you know, for me, and my criteria are a little different, but I'm doing this, as people that listen to the show know, and as you guys know, I'm doing a top 300 and a book that will discuss those in great detail. I currently have it as the number 19 show of all time. Ahead of it, I have Community, Yes Minister, Yes Prime Minister, and Seinfeld. So for me, it is one of the top four comedies of all time and easily a top 20 show. It is an absolutely landmark work. I think anyone who's interested in the history of television or pop culture in the last 100 years owes it to themselves to at least watch a few episodes. You know, as we've discussed tonight, the influence and legacy is just too vast to ignore, and it is a damn fine series with some real nice, subtle grace notes to it. Particularly, as Aaron said, the direction, which is, Sammy noted, you know, is largely dictated by Gleason, but hey. So, you know, now we get to that
Adam,
part of the...
Adam,
yep.
I'm sorry to jump in. Alan Fish, the late Alan Fish, was a big television fan, as you know, and he's British. He was British. He thought The Honeymooners was the greatest comedy that America ever made. He didn't put it ahead of his favorite British shows, which I think you know which ones I'm talking about. But he had The Honeymooners was his number one American comedy. But I can't tell you what – I can't put the ranking like you just asked all of us, mixing everything together. I'm just referring to comedy. That's it.
Yeah. Alan and I had some discussions, and at the time that we discussed it, I had not finished up. I had not gone back and watched the rest of Seinfeld. Now this is going damn near 10 years back, and I hadn't yet seen Community. I hadn't yet seen Yes Minister, Prime Minister. But you know, yeah. If it wasn't for my love of the surreal, I probably, you know, and such, I can see why some people might not like Community. I love it. If it wasn't for me being such a political wonk, especially in an institutional sense, loving things that make digs at the eternal problems with policymakers, Yes Minister wouldn't work for me. So, yeah, it's one of the great ones. No pun. It really is one of the great ones. But now we come to that part of the show where I like to ask us each of us this question before we go. Is there anything we haven't mentioned yet that you'd like to mention? And I'll go with you, Sammy. Is there anything that you'd like to mention that we haven't mentioned yet?
Well, you know, the show has it's universal. The appeal is universal. I'm not trying to deny that. And it'll appeal to television fans, comedy fans all over the country, or indeed all over the world. But I do believe that it has a bit of a local allure to the people who live in the New York City area, because it was set there. And it was at that time, you know, with the apartment buildings being close together, the alleyways, the Chinese restaurants, the different settings that, you know, made it clear that you were in the general area. So people who grew up in Brooklyn, he was a bus driver, the sewer worker, you know, the city life and all. I do believe that it did hold a special place in people's hearts, but I don't deny that, you know, somebody that lives in Alaska or China or Mexico could love it as well, just as much. But I do feel that it did have kind of a built-in appeal to the local denizens from this area. Maybe that's why I rate it as high as I do, because it was something that, you know, a baby boom as we grew up with it. It was around in this area. It was set in this area, and we had a special love for the show.
Mm. So, Carl, you?
Yeah, I think there's one thing we have to at least mention that we have not done yet, and that would have to be the theme music. Okay? Seriously, one of the greatest themes in the world, It was written by Sammy Spear, and just an amazing theme. And I'm the I'm a musician, so I always look at that too. So at least want to give a shout out to Sammy Spear and the theme music to The Honeymooners.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You, Aaron, any final thoughts?
We lost him again.
Uh-oh.
Unbelievable.
Okay. Okay, let's try it one more time. Aaron, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So now that we can hear you, what? Any last thoughts?
Not coming through here.
Yeah, it's not coming through for me. So
not coming through.
Sorry, Aaron. And it's too late in the show to try a reboot. So, okay, sorry, Aaron. Maybe in a couple of weeks you'll get a chance to finally say what your final thoughts on Honeymooners were when there's not. Unfortunately, you see, folks, this is a call-in show. We all call in to a hub by our phones, and that means that the quality of the audio can be affected by things like, storms and downed lines and such. Unfortunately, Aaron's having really bad storms in his area tonight.
Where is Aaron living? Where is
He's in upstate New York. He just sent me a text and said to say that, nope, that pretty much wraps it up. That's all I have to say. So we're good in that case. So now, Carl, we come to that part of the show that we call housekeeping. So what's coming up on Deviant Legion?
Well, right now we don't have anything set in stone. Okay, now what I will tell you is that we are now in July, and of course we've got July 4th coming up, and I can guarantee you that on Sunday, and I believe it will be at 8 o'clock, Doc, otherwise known as Eric Almond, and I will doing a commentary watch on one of my favorite July 4th movies that I always watch every year, and that would be Uncle Sam, and a very satiric slasher movie written by Larry Cohen and directed by Bill Lustig. And it's not their best, but, it's a lot of fun. I also will be over on KSDD with Stephen Ronquillo, and on Monday we're going to be doing a commentary watch on Alligator, okay? And this month is going to be summer fun month. So I can guarantee you that some of the shows that I am now getting together, one is going to be on the beach movies of the 60s, and I've got contacts on that through Tony Strauss, and we'll be able to get that together. We're going to be doing another show on summer vacation horrors, like Monster at Camp Sunshine and things like that. We'll be doing another show on that. We'll be doing a lot of commentary watches, including one next week. I'm not sure. I think it'll be Tuesday. Ernest Goes to Camp. But that's going to be the theme for July. And I can also tell you that the theme for August is going to be, since it's going to be so hot and muggy and nasty, it's going to be the month from hell. And it's going to be all about, the representations of hell and devils and all that sort of stuff, and heat and all that sort of good stuff. So we're going to be dealing with that a lot in August. But for July, it's going to be summer fun. So it's going to be a real fun month for us here at DLA.
Yeah. So on my own show on Cathode Ray Mission, next week we will be back here, same time, for a discussion of the British miniseries I, Claudius, based on the novel by Robert Graves. That's on the 8th of July. 1 week later, on the 15th of July, we will be back again, this time for a look at the career of James Cameron. I don't want to spoil anything, but that could be a really interesting show based on the passions one way and the other towards Cameron. So as always, thank you for listening. Thank you guys for coming in. And we will call that a wrap, folks. Thank you so much. On the count of three, we'll get going. One, two, three. Good night, folks.
Bye.
Good night. Thanks, Adam.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.